Hello and welcome to Also Interesting. My name is Ali Hekalife and today's episode will be entirely in English. Joining me today is Leon Newfork. I hope I pronounced the name right. Hi, Leon.
Almost. It's Newfork, but it's very close. It doesn't matter to me.
You are so many things. You're a podcaster, journalist, storyteller. You're an Harvard alumnus. And yes. I briefly covered your latest podcast production called Only Fantasy on one of my ordinary episodes. And when I thought I would like to link it for the show notes, I saw on your page a contact form. And then I thought maybe he would be up for a word. Minutes later, you answered. And now we are here. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for listening to the show.
Your show is a finished podcast production, 7 episodes about OnlyFans. It's called Only Fantasy. And you have some personal connections to the topic, but it's a very interesting way to tell a story because you're looking into many, many aspects of it, into the abyss, one could say, of it. Where did the topic start for you? Because I several times mentioned it and covered it from the perspective of a software developer and somebody who studied sociology. And I most of the time just called it Lonely Fans. But where did this topic start for you?
You will not be surprised to You may not be surprised to hear that Lonely Fans was on the list of potential titles that we considered at various points. But then I discovered that there was already something called Lonely Fans. So I was happy to find another pun that worked just as well.
Not just as well. It's quite a good one.
I like it better. It's true. I like it better. So where did it start? You know, I have been making podcasts for just under 10 years now. I guess I started in 2017 with a show called Slow Burn, where we basically looked back at historical events and tried to bring them back to life through original reporting. We did a season on the Watergate scandal and then another one on the Clinton impeachment scandal. And in both cases, what I found was that people had very short memories and you could quite easily surprise people, even when it came to topics that people think they know quite well. You know, everyone in America has seen All the President's Men about the Watergate scandal. And yet, as I found out through just a few phone calls, there were so many details and characters that had never sort of been canonized in the way that, you know, the sort of big plot points had in that film. Anyway, I've sort of taken that same approach more or less in everything I've done since, where I try to identify a story or a topic or a person about whom our audience will know something, but and maybe it's a topic that that our audience thinks they already understand. But then we, through again interviews and detailed analysis and attention to subtleties, can turn into something fresh. And so OnlyFans was a phenomenon that had exploded in the United States and all over the world during the pandemic. So in 2020, we started work on this show about a year ago now. So it had been around 5 years since OnlyFans had become kind of a household name. I usually think of myself as a pretty good proxy for our audience. And it was when I kind of was faced with my first big surprise that I became confident there was something here. And that surprise was basically, that, you know, based on the fact that I was under the misapprehension that OnlyFans was essentially a porn site. You know, I had this question in my head, like, how did this new porn site convince all of these people to start paying for pornography when, you know,
there are tons of free?
Exactly. There's like a fire hose of free pornographic content that has been available on the internet since I was a teenager. So what did this company, this new porn site, do differently? And so what I learned quite quickly, and you alluded to this in your introduction, that I had a personal connection to this story, I learned from my younger sister, whom I ended up interviewing for the show, that I was quite wrong to think of OnlyFans as a porn site. Obviously, it is an adult site. It's a site that runs on sex, certainly, and there is porn on there. But the better way to understand it, as my little sister explained to me, having spent a few years using it herself as an OnlyFans creator, the better way to understand it is really more like you could call it a paid messaging app. You could think of it as an online strip club. You can think of it as digital prostitution, and all of which is to say that it's not a porn site. It's a site where you can buy attention and time from primarily women who probably wouldn't give you time and attention in your real life.
Yeah, as someone who is chronically online, I first heard about it when it was a paywall service like Patreon nowadays, but they shifted quite early when the porn creators discovered that they are one of the paywall services that allows adult content. And nowadays, there's a huge industry you talked about in your podcast with all the messaging and the interaction and people having agencies for photo shootings and the messaging and all things thinkable. And I was quite surprised to hear about the huge amount of creators. I don't know if you have the number in the top of your head, but between 18 and 24, about 10% of American girls have or had a creator account.
Wow. And I don't know the percentages. I never crunched those numbers, but I know that at last count, I believe there were 4.6 million creators on the site. And I think that's all over the world, not just the US. Which is a massive, massive number. And the corresponding audience statistic is also mind-boggling. At last count, I think there were more than 400 million paying users on OnlyFans. And, you know, I think that was my second surprise. I knew it was popular. I just didn't know how popular it was. And what it made me realize was that this thing that I kind of considered fringe, something on the sort of margins of internet culture, was in fact utterly mainstream. And so that made me feel like I had missed something, that there was something going on that I didn't understand. And so that was sort of what sent me on the journey. And I was lucky to recruit a comedian and OnlyFans creator herself, Gracie Kanan, as my co-host. And she kind of served as my OnlyFans Sherpa, and showed me the ways of the world, and you know, went with me on this reporting odyssey.
And then you went to interview creators, agencies, customers, and most of the time I felt quite informed from your insights, but very sad for those who are creating and those who are consuming. It's not a happy story.
There's some happiness in it, right? There are people who, certainly on the creator side, who have made life-changing amounts of money on there. There are women who, I think, credit OnlyFans with their independence and their ability to pursue their passions instead of working a boring 9-to-5 job. And on the subscriber side, you know, one of my questions, and I think this is a question for Gracie as well, was like, is OnlyFans a net negative or a net positive for its subscribers or for society in general? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we go through a lot of the ways in which it's, you know, causing people grief and leading to various forms of deception, and certainly draining people's bank accounts. Mm-hmm. But the one way in which I kind of arrived at believing that there is a positive to it, even for the subscribers who are spending the money rather than making it, is that it is clearly filling a need that exists independently from the site. Like there is just a profound, you know, and it's a buzzword, and I feel like a I feel like a marketing guy saying this phrase, but there is a loneliness epidemic. But, you know, I don't know if it started with the pandemic. I don't know if it was, you know, exploded during the pandemic. But it's just true that I sort of, again, didn't quite appreciate the depth of this when I started. There are just people in America, at the very least, who just don't know anyone, and they don't have people to talk to or flirt with or start, you know, relationships with. And for them, like, maybe it is better than nothing. Maybe it is an outlet for some form of some approximation of this crucial human experience that they otherwise just wouldn't have.
I have the planning for an episode about loneliness, and just looking at the numbers, the average amount of close friends the average American has is in an interesting way dividing, because there are fewer people saying they have 4 to 5 close friends, and there are more people saying they have 1 or no close friend, and there are more people saying they have 10 and more close friends.
Huh.
And from my personal experience, I don't know how you handle your friendships, but more than 10 close friends sounds to me like they are having a different definition of friendship than
I was about to say the same thing. Maybe they're defining it differently. Yeah.
But seeing that it branches, something I would say is what Facebook and all the social medias did to us, that we have the feeling of frequent interactions with our friends, and then we have the feeling of interacting with even more people, because within half an hour I could check on all my friends, what they are doing today or over the last days, what I wouldn't have been able to do before. And therefore the meaning of friend seems to shift. But the fact that there are a growing number of people saying they have 1 or no close friend shows that there is a loneliness or an isolation epidemic happening.
See, I would have, if I had been the one doing that survey, I might have pushed for dividing the zeros from the ones, because to my mind, I probably would put myself in the category of having between 5 and 8 very close friends. But I think there are a lot of people who just have one, and I kind of think that might be, if not enough, then at least a vastly different experience of life than someone who has zero. And I just do think there are a lot of people who have zero.
Yeah. And then there's the other approach, talking about loneliness epidemic, where feminists online say that it is about the incel culture that invented this term and is parading it, because now men are saying all these independent women are creating a loneliness epidemic within young men. And I can see where they're coming from, where they're arguing from, but so the term loneliness epidemic is one for probably a great podcast on itself, but loneliness is a driving factor that brings customers to a site where you can have the feeling of closeness, companionship, a contact that is sexually available. And for me, this harvesting of loneliness has a very sticky touch to it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So do you by any chance know this economist and blogger named Robin Hanson? He's from he's sort of associated with the rationalists. He's a George Mason University professor. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Something rings a bell, but not that sure.
He's like, I remember reading his blog like in the mid-2000s, sort of in the same... He was sort of in the same ecosystem as like Eliezer Yudkowsky.
Mm-hmm.
And so Robin Hanson, I very distinctly remember, this would have been around 2012 or 13. No, sorry, I'm mistaken. It would have been around 2016 or 17. And he wrote a blog post with a headline using the phrase redistribution of sex. And it was a critique of progressive rhetoric around redistribution, where he said, you know, certainly all progressives agree that economic redistribution is good. We agree that inequality along various dimensions is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't we also agree that there is great inequality when it comes to access to sex? And if we can agree on that, shouldn't we feel compelled to do something about it? I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't looked this up in very recently, but I believe his blog post was occasioned by an incel shooting rampage. It was not like the really famous one that happened in California, but a different one, like a copycat, mm-hmm. where an incel, a guy who self-identified as an incel, you know, took revenge against women because they didn't want to sleep with him. And so Robin Hanson's point was, this is clearly a social crisis because it's leading to this kind of violence, which we all want to eliminate. So why can't we talk about sex redistribution? And it was a little bit of like a had a modest proposal vibe to it. Like, he wasn't being entirely literal, but people got really, really angry at him. And they accused him of advocating for sex slavery, for saying that women had a duty to provide lonely men with sex. And I could see how people could read him that way. But if you were familiar with his work, you knew that he was just like indulging in a thought experiment. Anyway, I thought of him.
I can see value in having these thought experiments and the debate about it without dying on the hill of saying that it's true. But yeah, I can value in arguing about it.
Yeah, he wasn't like proposing introducing a policy proposal. He was kind of making a point about how we think about different forms of inequality. But I thought of that blog post when we were working on this show, because no, we don't want sex slavery, and no, we don't want to compel anyone to have sex with anyone for the greater good. But like, OnlyFans strikes me as a solution, and it's an imperfect solution to be sure, to the problem of male frustration. And I think, you know, there is a recurring question that we ask ourselves and some of our interview subjects in the show about whether OnlyFans is actually serving this need or actually fulfilling a need that people have, or is it serving as a safety valve or like a pressure valve that's sapping people of the motivation to actually go out and find the real thing? So like, you can imagine someone who has these needs, who has no friends, who has no access to a community where they can, you know, look for a partner. They go on OnlyFans and they sort of satisfy themselves with this, paid imitation of romance. Does that reduce their drive to go out and find a partner in real life? And I don't know that obviously there's not one answer to that. I'm sure it's different for different people, but that's the kind of thing we were weighing.
So many thoughts to branch off. And for example, a good friend of mine told me when she was 17, close to 18, she got flooded, bombarded with ads. And she was in the gothic scene, so there were some images of her with interesting and quite intense makeup. And she got flooded with advertisements saying, you're about to get 18, so you're about to get rich because you can join our OnlyFans agency. And they never mentioned OnlyFans directly, but they said, we are a model agency, we will make young women like you rich quick. And there's a market going for those who are barely adults and offering huge amount of money. And I always talk with her about it, like imagining it would happen in the real world. Would you say it's okay for your daughter to strip in front of your neighbors and your friends if they are all paying and there's no touching involved? I would say definitely not, but
right.
That's the digital reality we are living in. There are websites like Pim Eyes, a face recognized search that advertises on another brand name, so you can look up your friends' children if they are on these adult websites.
Oh God!
And in your documentary, you talked about the fact that your interviewee, I think Bogdan was name, he said, men are looking for 14 to 18 year old girls. I wouldn't say women at that point. And that's so disgusting on so many levels that even if I see your broader point of what if there's a need and people could scratch their itch, not feeling so lonely, I don't think that is some behavior society should
condone, or encourage. Yes,
yeah,
I,
yeah, all I, of that.
I, that's hard. It's hard to disagree with that, even if you're trying to make a provocative point. I would say, you know, one of the things that I thought a lot about was that. Okay, so let's accept the premise that OnlyFans is a digital strip club, or it's a digital, or it's a form of digital prostitution. Historically, those jobs have been held by a relatively small number of women, right? Those were jobs that were done on the margins of society. They were not mainstream occupations. What OnlyFans did was lower the, and there's a reason for that, which is that it was costly, it was dangerous, it was risky, it was widely understood to be a way to ruin your life or expose yourself to all kinds of danger. What OnlyFans promised, and obviously convinced a lot of people of, was that that there is an easier, less risky way to do a similar thing, and by creating essentially a social media platform that, when you log onto it, doesn't look that different from Instagram or Twitter, it lowered the barrier to entry, or at least the perceived barrier to entry for sex work. And so suddenly we go from a world where sex work is something a small number of people do, while the rest of us kind of understand it to be an undesirable or at least risky endeavor, to suddenly there's more than 4 million people who see it as a viable, if not career path, then at least like a side job. And so what do we think about a world where sex work is this mainstream as an occupation? I think my instinct is that it's not good. maybe that makes me conservative. Maybe that makes me prude. But I think it feels self-evident to me that the more people are doing it, the larger the chances are that among that population are people who are not prepared for it, who are not equipped for it, who will regret it.
I wouldn't say conservative, but at least concerned.
Okay, thank you.
But you have no idea how often people try to toss me within all the right-wing spokespersons, because sometimes I quote them when they say interesting or loony stuff.
Yes, yes.
For example, on the topic of OnlyFans, on the topic of OnlyFans, the one and only Alex Jones, the rightest of all right-wing conspiracy theorists, he had the theory that China is paying women who are in essential work, like nurses, so they would leave their work as a nurse to be an OnlyFans model, so that America is with fewer equipped with essential care workers.
Yeah. Well, there's a similar line I heard from Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes. You know, that interview that the two of them did a couple months ago. This piece of it didn't make headlines the way some of their other remarks did, but they talked about how OnlyFans is like a Jewish conspiracy to weaken Western men.
So, they dear called... Mr. Journalist, now we have two sources for it.
Yeah, we just need one more. Well, I guess we have Alex Jones. He's talking about China, but it's the same. Same idea.
So the global elite is using OnlyFans to reduce the essential care workers. But besides the loony conspiracy talk, I mean, there actually is a point that there is a economic branch evolving we never had before, where women see an opportunity to make a lot of money quick, and they are leaving their professions. And I'm not sure if it's in the interest of these women. The money is in their interest, of course, but I'm not sure if that's something you want to have in your career path, even if I myself have very, let's say, interesting career path so far. But I have an odd feeling about it when women are leaving their professions where they studied for, where they worked hard for, to get into higher figures. Like, you had people on saying they make 15K a month. I can understand that the money is tempting, but you're leaving everything behind.
Yeah, I think there's that. But you could also talk about the fact that you can do it for a while and then find yourself unable to come back to whatever you were doing before for various reasons, whether because of stigma or because of you know, as happens with a lot of industries, you get sucked into something that is very lucrative, and then you have a hard time coming back to your, you invited me before we started taping to plug my other podcast. Well, this is actually a natural segue to mention, the show that I made before this one was about, Jerry Springer, also German born, American talk show host, who I'm sure you're aware of. He before he was, you know, notorious around the world as the host of this talk show, that was widely credited with, you know, degrading Western culture. He was a progressive ideal, an idealistic progressive politician in the Democratic Party in the Midwest in America. He was the mayor of Cincinnati, a major city in the Midwest, and had big dreams of becoming a senator or the governor of the state, and then kind of tripped and fell into entertainment by way of becoming a news broadcaster, and then found himself, you know, at the center of this circus. And he became obviously very famous and rich off of doing the Jerry Springer Show. And his whole life, the rest of his life, he dreamed, he wanted to go back to what he was doing before, which was and now he thought, okay, now I have all this money, I have this freedom, I have this platform, I can go and become the nominee for Ohio governor. And he considered it, and he tried, and he failed, and he just couldn't climb his way back because people associated him with the show. And he died, you know, having never succeeded at going back to his one true passion. So you can see the analogy there.
But I mean, reality proved him wrong. Nowadays, he's ruled by a TV actor. So
well, that's what made him think that maybe there was a path for him. I mean, he was considering running for governor after Trump was elected for the first time, and he thought, well, listen, if Trump can become president, having, you know, been the host of a trashy television show, why not me? But anyway,
I would like to make another point besides the women who are maybe intrigued by the money and having these bent in their career path. I would like to talk about the man who is spending the money, because if we agree that it's most likely not China, Israel, or the deep state. Incredible journalists would disagree. So if we agree that the money is paid by individuals all around the globe, me coming from the software development industry, there was always the phrase of hunting for whales. You don't need to have many small paying customers. You want the few whales who will spend big money. So in your in-app purchases, don't make them so that everybody who uses your app will spend money, but make it so that some got hooked and they will spend thousands. And that was some practice in the early years of app development that really took on, and something I'm really repelled by, because it feels like looking for people with some emotional weakness that I can fulfill with my app, with my game, with these in-app purchases, with something. For example, many people who are very into collecting things like Pokemon cards, Labubus, and so on, they're trying to fill some incompleteness they had in their childhood, like a complicated parent situation and so on, and they try to fulfill things they couldn't have as a child. And exploiting these emotional wounds to get most money out of them always felt wrong to me, but the term hunting for whales stuck in the industry. And when you're talking about men you interviewed who were spending 12K or 60K, like really big amounts of money. I don't know about your situation. You're probably living in New York and 12K is...
No. That sounds like a lot to me. Don't worry.
A big lunch. So,
yes, a big lunch.
So these sums, this amount of money, I can't imagine that you can justify it with, yeah, but they got such a intense emotional help and support from the creator in return.
You may recall in, I think, the second episode of our show, we interviewed a woman who had a customer for many years. He was her whale. I think she told us that he had spent a total of like $43,000 on her
over the years. That she got, and then plus 20% for OnlyFans.
Thank you. Yes, good caveat. Yes, in fact, he had spent $43,000 plus 20%, which OnlyFans took. But in exchange, what he got from her was not only her pictures and her videos and her companionship, but she got to know him so well that during one of their video calls, she was attuned enough to his to the details of his anatomy that she noticed that one of his testicles was looking bigger than the other one.
You and can use all the words you want. There are no advertisement partners. Now, in fact, this podcast is 100% community funded, so you can say testicles. And
I can say testicles. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. I'll try to say it as many times as I can with the remaining time.
Fantastical.
But she noticed that, you know, something was off, and she told him, said, you know, you maybe want to go see a doctor. And she convinced him to go see a doctor, and sure enough, he had testicular cancer, and he got surgery, and he credited her with saving his life. So that's a pretty good deal for $43,000, you could say.
Yeah.
No health insurance, but, you know, it's not covered, but maybe it should be.
We have communal health care here in Germany, and it's communism for you over there. So,
we could only dream, yeah.
Yeah, but about this man spending this amount of money, Bogdan said, yeah, but they know they are in a fantasy, and I don't agree on that, because I think people are very good in ignoring reality.
Yes.
And the things they are buying, the girlfriend experience and so on, that all sounds to me like a cry for help. They want to be the provider to somebody who cares for them, but they are the provider to some Indonesian call center guy who's sending emojis.
Yes, I think that's correct. A few things to say there. One is, I would agree that even if it's not true about every subscriber, I think it's very common, probably, for men who are spending large sums of money to be under the misapprehension that they are in something approximating a real relationship. I mean, there's the widely ridiculed figure of the guy who leaves the strip club, right, and says to his friends, oh, you know, I think Candy really liked me. I think we really had a connection. I think she really, you know, and of course his friends remind him that, in fact, it's her job to make him think that she really liked him. And that is in fact what he's paying for.
I hear the sentence about that women are thinking that their psychiatrist cares is like men thinking their stripper loves them.
I've never heard that. That's good.
It's the profession too.
Yes,
to hold the illusion.
Yes. Yes. But I think the other thing to say there is that, like, as much as we make fun of that guy who walks out of the strip club thinking this, it's not entirely his fault, because there's a reason why these people are professionals, and it's that they know how to manipulate people, and they know how to create the impression of authenticity. Like, that is, in fact, their primary skill in many cases. Mm. And so I think, you know, I had this experience. I didn't go, like, full gonzo for this project. I was not, like, I did not spend $43,000 on OnlyFans, but I did spend, like, $50 because I did want to experience it a little bit. Mm. And so one of the women I followed on OnlyFans, she was this, you know, in her picture, she is this, like, young blonde girl who lives on a farm in the Midwest or something.
Willow, like the tree?
Yes, exactly. And Willow engaged me in a chat. She said, "Hi, Leon. Like, what's your story?" Like, you know, kind of flirtatious opening line that you might be so lucky to hear in a real life bar or something. And so you respond. You say, "Oh, I'm Leon. I'm in New York or whatever." And then they start talking. And then, of course, the script dictates that before too long, they offer to sell you something. It's whether it's a bundle of photos that other people are not getting access to unless they pay. Or maybe they offer a live video experience. Anyway, in the process of this sort of quite brief conversation, I noticed right away that she was making all kinds of grammatical mistakes that an American girl from the Midwest, as she presented herself, would not make. And so in my reporter capacity, I said to her, I say that in quotes. I said to her, Willow, you know, I noticed that you made these unusual grammatical errors. Am I really talking to you, to Willow, or am I talking to a professional chatter, you know, based in another country? Because I, at this point, had heard and learned all about this industry of chatters who are, as you alluded to, are based in call centers in India and the Philippines, all over the world, and they're paid like $2 a day for the job. And her response was immediate, and it was extremely bracing. She was like, "Leon, I can't believe you would ask me that. I can't believe you would. It's so sad to me that you would accuse me of such a thing. Of course, it's me. How can you think that?" And then you sent me sad face emojis. And you know, I think of myself as a smart guy. I'm like a relatively savvy consumer, especially in this context where I'm like, I've been doing reporting on this. Like, I should know better. And yet, I can tell you with total sincerity that in that moment, I felt like I had gravely offended this poor girl Willow, who's just trying to do her job. And here I am, like this asshole, accusing her of something. And I immediately called my co-host Gracie, and I told her, "Oh God, I feel so bad. Like I'm gonna send her $5 as an apology." And Gracie was like, "Leon, what are you out of your mind? Like, of course it's a chatter. Of course it's a chatter." And it, like, there was something like very revelatory to me about that moment, because if I could be fooled, you know, on that visceral level for even a second, like, it means that no one's really above it. You know, like, you think of these guys and you're like, "Oh, these pathetic, delusional losers who, like, convince themselves that they're talking to a real person, or that that person really likes them." But, like, I don't know, it made me realize that it could happen to me. And, you know, Bogdan, whom you referenced, this is a Romanian kind of OnlyFans kingpin. He described himself in very boring terms as like an administrator, I think, or an organizer. He does their taxes. He does like legal things for them. But he's had a long career in the sort of webcamming industry. And, you know, in his amazing Romanian accent, he told me all about how American men are his primary user base, because they're so gullible and they're
You're too soft.
Yes, exactly. We've never been to war, and we grew up having hot water, and therefore we are, you know, he said, I have two rib cages, unlike you. And yes. So, you know, there, I think he would agree, I think, that his harem of OnlyFans models is fooling people. But I think his other point that I find somewhat compelling is like, listen, if someone's spending $50 on a picture, like, I'm not going to feel guilty about taking it from him. It means he has $50 to spend on a picture.
Yeah, probably. But then you have the American economy, and people are in crazy debt compared to the rest of the world.
True.
The American way of life is mostly funded by credit. And I can't get over the fact that people are just normal people with university degrees are in that amount of debt that they consider prostituting themselves online, if that even is a word. So many of the young girls ending up on OnlyFans are doing it in the need of money they first had to spend to get their degrees or other necessities. Your American houses are built out of cardboard. You don't have health insurance. It's not entirely true, but there's a lot of truth to it. So there are many reasons why people in the United States are in horrible debt, and therefore I can understand that get rich quick is tempting. And then if there are many people lonely and they have access to money they have to pay back over decades, but yeah, they are lonely now, they will spend it. And
I think that's true. I mean, and of course, like, you know, would Bogdan's argument pertain to someone in a casino? Like, oh, well, look, if you're spending $50 to put down a bet, like, that means you can afford it. And obviously, we know that gambling ruins lives all the time. And so, yeah, I think that is a very valid counter argument.
And there was one thing about Bogdan where I had to think about Nietzsche and the quote about the abyss. "He who fights with monsters should look to it that he himself does not become a monster. And if you gaze for long into an abyss, the abyss gazes also into you." And I think Bogdan is quite able to strangle the monsters. But he's very aware of the fact that he isn't doing net positive for society. He is doing net positive for his wallet.
Yeah, and there's something refreshing about him because at least he's honest about it, right? Whereas we talked to another guy who has a similar job. I would say maybe he would disagree, but he helps run like a boutique OnlyFans agency in LA, and he's very professional and very slick and speaks the language of progressive, you know, capitalism or whatever, and he. I asked him, I was like, you know, we've interviewed multiple men who spent untold sums of money on women they thought liked them and thought that they were going to meet in real life. And it turned out that they weren't even talking to one person impersonating this woman. It turned out they were talking to like a bunch of random Indian guys who, you know, who would clock in and out of their shifts and pass him back and forth between themselves. They felt quite deceived and betrayed and fell into a horrible depression as a result of, you know, realizing what was going on. And he was like, you know, I completely hear it. And of course, it's an ethical gray area. The way I sleep at night is I remind myself that these men are paying for companionship. And no, it's, you know, sure, it's true that the companionship they're getting is not from the person they think they're getting it from, but it is companionship. They are getting the product that they're paying for, which is someone to talk to. And I find this to be unconvincing, let's say. And so, yeah, compared to him, Bogdan is at least like an open, what do you call it, profiteer who is unashamed to say that he is doing this because he wants a swimming pool.
And it didn't start with OnlyFans and these agencies. There's a proverb, my bad show when translating it to English, but for our audience, I can't say it either in Russian or in German. So there's this proverb that young women get told in the Soviet Union that there's a small hole where entire family homes got lost in.
And
wow. I mean, it's, you can picture the story behind it. So, that men are paying crazy amounts for the attention of women and taking high risks is nothing new and nothing OnlyFans invented. And I would highly recommend everybody listening to your show. But for your perspective on doing this documentary, what have you learned and what are questions following the documentary now that it's shipped?
What did I learn? Well, I guess I learned that I am very lucky, which I knew in many ways, but I think I took for granted the fact that I've been able to build a life where I don't need this or don't even want it, right? Mm. Like I have my 5 to 8 close friends. I have my wife whom I love and with whom I have a child. And I say this in the show and Gracie appropriately made fun of me for saying so, but like if I want to have a birthday party, I can invite people and they'll actually come. And that is just not true for so many people out there, especially now that we are able to, as you referred to before, like we can sit on our computers and feel like we've just interacted with 30 people and by scrolling through TikTok or whatever. I think people's tendencies to isolate themselves have been exacerbated and encouraged by social media. And so, yeah, I think there's some humility, I suppose, to absorb from this. Like you think you're above needing this, but it's only a matter of luck that you don't. What else did I learn? I mean, I learned a lot. I learned about how this whole thing works. I was not aware that there was such a robust ecosystem that had grown up around OnlyFans. And in terms of other questions that I have, I mean, this is a boring answer, but like there is the looming threat of AI or whatever, the looming promise of AI that you can imagine changing this entire business. I think already it's quite clear that the chatters, the people who are in the Philippines or in India, are probably going to be out of work soon because, you know, in fact, not only can chatbots probably avoid those grammatical mistakes that tips me off to Willow being not who she claimed to be. But they're probably less likely to make people feel betrayed in a surprising way. Like the men we talked to, I asked them, like, well, would you have felt better finding out that rather than, you know, a guy in India, you were talking to a chatbot? And he said, I would have preferred that because at least then I know I wasn't spilling my guts to some stranger. I was, you know, I was talking to a computer or whatever. So yeah, I think I'll be interested to see how much AI disrupts this business, in part because I think it'll, and I suppose we already sort of have the answer to this question, but I remember not too long ago being skeptical that anyone would ever have an emotional, you know, conversation with a chatbot. And of course we see this all the time now, and it's a major change, you know, compared to just a few years ago, that people are, even people who aren't crazy, are developing, you know, what you could, I suppose you call them, relationships with chatbots. So I think it'll be a test of whether AI can replace, human connection. You know, I suppose the premise of that comment is that, like, OnlyFans can replace human connection, and I don't think it can. Even if it serves as a salve for people's loneliness and a sort of temporary, you know, relief from it, it's not the same. And we'll see, I guess, if AI is just as good as that as OnlyFans creators.
Yeah, from all these controversy about having AI girlfriends and boyfriends, I would say the small bit of good news that you can take from it is that people are very open for emotional connections, and that these connections are out there and people are looking for somebody to fulfill them. And as you mentioned, that you have now friends you can call and they would appear to your birthday party or something. That's that's something that is quite new in my life. For, I would say, the last 3 or 4 years, I have these kind of friends. And I always thought that I hate birthday parties, but I just hadn't the right crowd to party with. And nowadays, it's easy to forget how not normal it is, how you shouldn't take it too much for granted to have these close connections around you and these friends, the relationship, and so on. And yeah, from listening to your Only Fantasies podcast, I was at least relieved to notice that this entire ecosystem is something that would give nothing to me as of right now, and that I'm happy not being trapped in it. So thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your documentation.
Oh, thank you so much for the fun conversation. This was great. Thank you for having me on.
We're running out of time, but I would love to have you on the second time for one of your other shows. So maybe that
anytime.
Will be. Thank you very much.
I'd be delighted. Here, I'm going to... Goodbye. Wait, Ali, can I ask you something before we go?
Sure.
This is random, but I... so I'm working on another project right now where we interviewed... a German couple who didn't speak any English, and so we interviewed them with a translator.
Yeah,
and they're somewhat elderly, maybe like in their 70s, and we are looking for a man and a woman that speaks good English but with a German accent to serve as translators for us. And I wonder if you could think if you know of anyone who might be interested in such a thing.
Know anyone who can speak English?
Well, I mean, it's a funny thing, right? Like when in any like spy film about Russians, they speak English but with a Russian accent, as if that makes it better. But indeed, it does serve the listener, you know, in a way, so to hear someone.
I try to avoid my German accent, but for sure I can do some translation for you or some recordings.
Well, you sound too young. You sound too young. I think, I don't know how old you are, but we need someone like who will sound like an older person. Anyway, think about it. If you think about it, if anyone comes to mind, let me know. Okay.
And if you ever need a translation, just let me know.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Goodbye.
Okay, Ali, this was really fun. I appreciate your time. Bye.
Bye.